Welcome to Get Sleepy, the podcast where we listen, we relax, and we get sleepy. My name's Thomas, and I'm your host. Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you haven't heard already, there is a new way that you can support this podcast. We've just launched the Get Sleepy Premium channel, a podcast feed that gives you access to our entire back catalogue and includes a bonus episode every Thursday. I want to say thank you to everyone who's signed up already. It really means so much to have your support. And in return, we will keep working to make sure that Get Sleepy is the best tool for aiding a good night's rest. I also want to say thank you to tonight's sponsors. Firstly, the good people responsible for the incredibly entertaining mobile game, Best Fiends. Best Fiends is a casual game that anyone can play. You can spend as much or as little time as you'd like in the game. Having played plenty of the levels myself, I can confirm that it really is a fun and easy to use game. The visuals are great, and each level has something different that keeps it fresh. You can share your progress with friends on social media, and if you have any top tips, feel free to send them my way. So engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile game is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. And a big thanks also goes out to BetterHelp for supporting this podcast. You may feel like there's something interfering with your happiness or holding you back from achieving your goals. These past few months have been a really tough and testing time for a lot of people, and it can really help to talk to somebody about your mental health. BetterHelp offers totally confidential, professional, and secure online counselling. There is a broad range of expertise available, and the service is available for clients worldwide. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counsellors if needed. You'll find tons of amazing reviews on their website. Visit betterhelp.com/getsleepy. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. And join over 800,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. And right now there's a special offer for our Get Sleepy listeners. You'll get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/getsleepy. As for tonight's story, TK will guide us as we go on another journey through the magical Library of Time. This one takes us nearly 400 years into the past, to the Great Plains of North America. There, we will meet the Hidatsu people, discover their ingenious farms, and visit their Earth Lodge villages. But beforehand, if you need a little help to really relax and put your mind and body at ease, begin by taking some deep breaths. Inhale for 6 seconds. Hold the breath for a moment and slowly release. Focus on the breath and the way it restores calm to your body as your chest expands and contracts. Feel the flow of air through your nostrils, into your lungs, and back out through your mouth. and feel the weight of your head sinking into your pillow. Your mind can rest here too, supported and comfortable, putting its workload to one side for the rest of the night. When you're ready, let your breath return to its natural rhythm. And as you begin to settle in and drift off to sleep, allow a new image to form in your mind. It's an old library, marked by the passage of time. And it's the perfect place to find a dreamy adventure on a night like this.
You stand at the entrance of an old stone building. Vines crisscross along the outer walls. No one has been here for a long time, you think. You approach the set of enormous double doors at the entrance. The finely polished mahogany seems more ancient than time itself. The panels of the doors are covered from top to bottom in carvings of human exploration and endeavor. You reach for the tarnished brass handle and pause briefly as your eyes are drawn to the panel near your hand. A carved scene scrolls out across the wood from left to right. Men wearing long feathered hats and thick bison hides crouch low in the grass, bows at the ready, as a herd of bison grazes nearby. As the scene continues, the men are crossing a river in little round boats like teacups, bobbing in the water. Across the river is a field of mixed crops. Women with long dresses and braided hair are at work, loading the harvest on small sleds. Beyond the field, a village sits on a flat rise. A ditch and wall encircle it. Instead of houses, there are many mounds of earth packed tightly together. Your fingers glide over the smooth edges of the carving. With a push on the door handle, the door swings open gently with a soft creak. You pass through the doorway into the foyer of a resplendent library. The floor is tiled in green and white marble and polished to a shining finish. The silhouette of your reflection in the floor is embroidered with a million spots of light. You look up to see a phenomenal crystal chandelier sparkling far above your head. Across the room, between two curving staircases, is a sign. You step closer to read the elegant gold script. It says, "Welcome to the Library of Time. Only the most curious souls can find this place. Each and every book here connects to a different time and place. While in the past, you will neither be seen nor heard. You cannot change the past, after all. You can only learn from it. And learn you shall. You turn to the left and descend the staircase down one floor. With each step down, you feel yourself relaxing as the stillness of the library and the smell of old books surround you. When you reach the next floor, rows of bookshelves stretch out in all directions. You pick an aisle to walk down and absently run your fingers across the spines of the books as you pass. The feel of one book causes you to stop. You pull it down from the shelf. The book is bound in rawhide and painted with simple figures in black and red. At the center of the cover is a wooden inlay in the shape of three plants growing upon one another. A squash, a climbing bean, and a stalk of maize. Beneath the inlay is a title written in intricate beadwork, 1634. You tuck the book under one arm and walk toward a nearby sitting area. A bench made of finished timber with thick brown cushions sits next to a side table in the shape of an animal skin drum. On top of the side table is a lamp designed to look like a stalk of maize with the light bulb sticking out like a corn cob. You sit with the book in your lap and take a moment to clear your mind. The sound of your breathing rises and falls as you settle into the cushions. You open the book and begin to read. The Hidatsa are a Siouan-speaking people who settled in the Missouri River Valley of North Dakota sometime in the 15th or 16th century. At the junction of the Missouri and Knife Rivers, they built villages and quickly became a solid link in the trade routes stretching across North America. It was at one such village where the famed Lewis and Clark expedition discovered a young Shoshone woman named Bird Woman. You may know her as Sacagawea. But before that land became North Dakota, before the rivers changed their names, it was just the heart of everything that is. Home. And the Hidatsa were the people of the willows. You stop reading for a moment and lay your head back. Your eyes close as you imagine the life of the Hidatsa people. Your breath moves slowly in and out, and you begin to slip backwards through the streams of time. The soothing babble of a river fills the air as its waters eddy gently along its banks. There is a scent of grass and earth and the sound of honking geese flying south for the winter. You open your eyes. You are sitting on the cool grass of a riverbank. A willow sways overhead, its long, wispy branches fluttering in the breeze. The sun slides low across the late afternoon sky, ready to bloom into shades of red and orange above the vast, flat plains that spread out in all directions. The wide, placid river flows by sleepily, and converges with another river a bit downstream. Below you, on the river's edge, several men are loading small circular boats with meat, animal hides, bundles of bones, and wolf-like dogs. They are wearing various animal skins. Some have on buckskin shirts decorated with hanging tassels. A few are wearing bison cloaks and leather breechcloths. The majority have on leather leggings and moccasins. Their hair is braided, mostly in two thick braids, hanging over their shoulders. All wear feathered headdresses, symbols of their exploits, some with many feathers, others with few. They cast off, one man to a boat, to cross the gently flowing river. A few are left behind, flipped upside down on the riverbank. You stand and walk through the soft grass to where the boats lay. Something about the boat seems unusual. As you get closer, you realize that they are covered in thick fur. You turn one over to get a better look. The boat is surprisingly light, only about 30 pounds. The 4-foot-wide boat resembles a large bowl, just big enough to fit a single person along with some goods and personal items. It is made from a bison hide stretched over a wooden skeleton. A large willow hoop is attached to the hide at the top, forming the mouth of the boat. Crossbars run between the top hoop and a smaller bottom hoop. The thick hide keeps it nearly waterproof, and the hair on the outside helps to steady the craft in the water. This is known as a bull boat, named after the animal hide exterior. You pick up a small paddle and push the boat onto the water before climbing inside. The little bison boat bobs sleepily along as you casually paddle. The flow of the river is steady but gentle. The sinking sun is warm on your back. You take in a deep breath of autumn-scented air. You look back to see that the boat and paddle that you took have been miraculously replaced. The words on the sign in the Library of Time come to mind. You cannot change the past, after all. Before long, your boat bumps against the opposite shore, and you climb out. The sound of singing and fieldwork drifts over the top of a small rise. You climb up the riverbank to find a large field stretching over a low plain. About a dozen women are working in the field, each wearing deerskin dresses past their knees, decorated with beads, elk teeth, and lines of red paint. They have on leather leggings and moccasins, and also have braided hair. The field is planted with maize, beans, and squash, a combination of staple crops known as the Three Sisters. This form of farming is practiced by native people throughout the Americas. The fields are prepared by creating small mounds for each crop. Rows of corn are planted with rows of climbing beans in between. Each section is encircled by squash. As the maize stalks grow, the beans use them as a trellis where they can spread in the sun. The beans, in turn, take nitrogen from the air and put it into the soil, which fertilizes the maize and squash. The squash grows in a thick carpet across the ground, protecting the plant roots from the sun and animals, and keeping the ground cool and moist. It's a perfect harmony. A large dog stands by attentively as one woman loads a basket of squash onto a sort of sled called a travois. The sled is made from two long willow poles bound together on one end and cut flat on the other. A square piece of lattice made from the branches is attached in the middle between the two poles. The woman calls over the well-trained wolf dog and lifts up the bound end of the sled. She ties the sled over the dog's shoulders and around its body. She takes another basket and loads it onto her own back using shoulder straps. Then, off they go down a trail to a nearby village. You follow their path across the flat plain. As you pass through the field, you realize that most of the harvest has already been taken in. The air is crisp in your nose, and the unmistakable theme of fall surrounds you. Dry, golden leaves flutter and float in the setting sun as you walk. The village stands on a raised, flat piece of land, surrounded by a walled ditch. A palisade, or wall of pointed timber stakes, encircles the village. A single land bridge crosses the ditch and leads inside. People are coming and going, but no one seems to notice you as you cross the bridge and enter the village. You recall the words on the sign in the Library of Time. While in the past, you will neither be seen nor heard. An incredible sight awaits on the other side of the bridge. Rather than houses, huge grassy mounds stretch out in the distance. There must be 100 or more, all packed together like marbles pressed into the earth. The mounds are 40 feet wide and nearly 15 feet tall. Each is home to between 10 and 20 people, usually extended family. These homes are called earth lodges, and they are built by the Hidatsa women. They begin by setting four sturdy posts in the ground at the center of where the mound will stand. Then, they place timbers across the top of the posts in a square. These are the load-bearing beams of the structure. The women then lay logs in a circle across the center beams. Willow branches, bunches of dried prairie grass, and mats of cut sod are used to cover the entire structure, leaving a small hole in the center for smoke to escape. From the outside, the earth lodges look like large mounds of earth with a tunnel entrance. A slight chill seeps into the air as the sun dips low on the horizon. You decide to move inside, where a warm fire is burning. The entrance to the Earth Lodge is a short hallway with walls and a roof of timbers. At the end of the hall, a wooden windbreak stands to your left and straight ahead. A gush of warm air and the glow of a fire pulses through an entrance to your right. You walk past the windbreak to find a spacious room. Men, women, and children are sitting on woven mats in a semicircle around a large fire. There are perhaps three families. Several beds line the wall, each with a canopy of animal skins to keep out the cold northern night. Rawhide pouches stuffed with home goods hang from the rafters all around. At the center of the earth lodge, an old man wearing a long feathered headdress sits on a raised seat by the crackling fire. Behind him hangs a bison hide painted with glyphs, images that portray a story. The glyphs start at the center and spiral outward in a counterclockwise direction. The hide is called a winter count. The winter count is a history of the tribe. Each glyph represents the most important or memorable story from one year. The years are counted from winter to winter. It will soon be time to add another image to the long story. Everyone is paying close attention to the chieftain as he points to various glyphs. You take a seat on an empty bed and watch as the chieftain speaks. He raises one hand in a slow arc, then slaps it down on his other fist. He looks down, then up, and smiles slyly. The spectators laugh as if they had just heard an old joke they'd never get tired of. The chief then places his palms on his knees before nodding and motioning to a young man. The man stands. He has on a unique headdress with a globe of blue magpie feathers in front and a fan of turkey feathers on the back. He is bare-chested, with a long red cloak flowing down from his shoulders. He has on hide leggings decorated with beaded patterns and dozens of tassels. A bone war whistle hangs from his neck. He holds a bow in one hand, a rattle made from deer hooves in the other. This man is a dog dancer, one of the bravest men in his village. His willingness to fight and risk his life to protect his tribe has earned him this honor. The dog dance represents battle maneuvers and is performed to ensure success in battle. A drumbeat begins to sound, followed by another and another. The dog dancer begins to crouch low. He starts to stomp his feet in rhythm with the drums. The dancer starts to turn, bobbing his body along with the drumbeat. He shakes the rattle in his hand and begins to chant. He keeps in step as the drums quicken. His arms and body move in a slow arc. Finally, he stomps both feet down with the last beat of the drum and stands up straight. There is silence for a moment. Then everyone cheers him. As the festivities die down, you lay back on the bed to contemplate the day. You think of the round little bull boat and the round village and the round houses, the circle of the glyphs on the winter count and the turning of the dog dancer. There is a sense of completeness about the Hidatsa. They are at one with the roundness of the earth, the cycle of the seasons, the circle of life. And they will continue on that way, year after year. Your eyes start to droop as the warmth of the fire washes over you. And you feel yourself slipping once more into the streams of time. You open your eyes to find yourself back on the timber bench in the Library of Time. The book sits closed in your lap. You take a deep breath and place the book on the side table. You reach up to turn out the little corn stalk lamp. You settle deep into the warm chair and close your eyes, drifting into a pleasant dream.